Nightlife with Suzanne Hill on ABC Radio and on the ABC Listen app.
The Playlist. Welcome to tonight's playlist. Now, my next guest needs a little introduction. I will let his music do it for him. Wish I knew what you were.
Don't make me hang. They only make me feel like breathing. In unguarded moments, I'm almost with you. I can sense the way for me. I'm almost with you. Is this the taste of victory? I'm almost with you.
Yeah, the Church are one of Australia's most enduring and influential bands. They're about to embark on a national tour playing all their greats like you've never heard them before, accompanied by a 30-piece symphony orchestra. So we have invited Steve Kilby, frontman of the Church, to join us tonight on the playlist. He's going to share some of his favourite songs with you. Steve, thank you so much for being here on Nightlife.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, back when you wrote many of these church songs, did you ever kind of imagine them being played in front of an orchestra?
No, not really. I didn't. No, it sort of wasn't that. I don't know. I never allowed myself the luxury of that. And it was only back in 2010, 2011, this promoter and manager called Joe Segg, it was his ambition to see the Church play with an orchestra. And so it was only then I ever really thought that I might grasp at such an idea.
So what's it like being converting the songs and changing them for orchestral arrangements?
Well, we did it once already. And I didn't have a lot to do with that. George Ellis kind of did all the arrangements, and mostly we agreed with what he did. So we kind of just turned up and we heard the orchestra play them, and we sort of, we're going to be more consultative this time, I think. We're going to consult more with him. But back then he sort of did it with Tim, our drummer, and I wasn't, for some reason, I wasn't a big part of it. I'm going to be more of a part of it this time.
Well, what was your take, Steve, on what having the orchestra did, how it changed the songs, what it brought out in them?
It just, I don't know, it's like it's an enhancement, isn't it? It's like, you know, you don't have to have the band playing all the time. So some of the songs were orchestra and the band weren't playing so much. So some of them were rearranged just for orchestra and the band sort of laid out. It's great, you know, that what you have up your sleeve by combining the orchestra and the band, and then just having the band and then just having the orchestra and then bringing them all back together. You've got sort of like more dimensions you can kind of get into the music, I think.
All right. Well, the tour is called A Psychedelic Symphony, with dates from the 1st of November, starting at the Sydney Opera House, right through to the 28th of November in Adelaide at the Theberton Theatre. Now, Steve, let's get into your playlist. What age would you say you were when music really hit you?
It really hit me at a very young age, but pop music really hit me the first night I watched, like everyone else in Australia, I first saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, like in very early 1964 or late 63. The Beatles were like on the Ed Sullivan Show, and that's when I sort of, and the way all my aunties and my mother all hated them, and I thought, wow, there's something really in this. You know, it's more than just music. There's a whole thing that I guess we were waiting for to free us from the post-war years, you know, the black and white 1950s. And I didn't really understand. I wasn't a huge fan of Elvis. Of course, I've gone back now and revised my opinion on that. But so the Beatles were like, they were, when they happened and when they were on TV and as they kept coming back and back, it was more than just music. It was like a whole movement of rebelling against these sort of like post-war values that being in English and coming out here as 5 10-pound poms, you know, are surrounded by all these English women and men who sort of like were stuck in this World War II mode. And the Beatles were the beginning of the end of all of that. And but also the music was incredible. You know, it was nothing like it. Nothing. You hadn't seen anything like that. It was like the beginning of the sort of youth movement.
Most of the tracks that you're going to play for us tonight, though, Steve, they're not necessarily the best known from the era. So how did you end up discovering the tracks that we're going to play tonight? I imagine a lot of them weren't necessarily top 40 songs at the time that you
No.
came across them.
Well, when I was about 16, I had another I replunged, I reaffirmed my vows with rock and roll. I bought a bass guitar and I started collecting records and I started reading the music press like voraciously and listening to shows. Like there was that show, Chris Winter's Room to Move, on where he and you know, people seeking out radio shows where they played other music, hanging around in record shops, meeting other people who were into this, into whatever I was trying to find. I just sort of, it became like a, I know 90% of my life was listening to, finding, talking about, or playing music. You know, it just suddenly, and then I was looking for music that might have been overlooked everywhere by importing the papers and from America and England. Keeping my nose down to the ground, looking for new trends.
Steve Kilby from The Church is here with us on Nightlife tonight. Okay, let's get into your playlist, Steve. The first track is Kangaroo by Big Star. Tell us about this song and its arrival in your life and what it means to you.
There was this band called Big Star that I was reading a lot of reviews about that was sort of from Memphis, and it featured Alex Chilton, who was in the Box Tops. He was like a child star, and then he moved to Memphis and he formed this band. And they made this third album that was also called Sister Lovers. And the record company considered it so dissolute, it didn't come out for a couple of years. And it was like a legendary record that was had been held back because they thought no one would want to hear music like this. And of course, when it came out, it was incredible. And it is dissolute. And you can hear them sort of the songs sort of fall apart as you're listening to them. It's the first time I've ever heard anyone manipulate that parameter of music of actually falling apart, because up until then, music had been anything but that. But here we were for the first time, like in 1975, 1976. Whenever I actually got my hands on this record, I'm not sure. I found the first two in a record, first two Big Star records in a now long defunct record shop in Bondi Junction when when it was still a street, not a mall. And I walked up this set of stairs one afternoon, and there were the first two Big Star records. But the third one didn't come out yet. I remember now, it didn't come out till like 1978. It was put on ice by a record company, went, no one will want to hear this. When I heard it, I was absolutely stunned by, I don't know, just the feelings of anxiety and the general druggy feeling of the whole record and the fact that it's, I don't know, lazy and hopeless and the music stops and starts and this song became, I think this Jeff Buckley did a cover of this song somewhere in on a bonus disc. I think this is a very influential song, Kangaroo. I think a lot of people, it was also on This Mortal Coil, a record that came out, a gothic kind of record on 4AD. I just think it sort of represents a certain era and a certain feeling that had never been done before. When you listen to this, it's sort of like, I don't know, it's like a smoky, falling apart, hopeless wreck and ramble shambles of a song, and yet it's just so full of, I don't know, feeling. It really made me feel, I'm not sure what it makes me feel, sort of excited. Yeah. I could really see myself at the party where he meets, when he starts off, "I first met you, it was at the party." I'm there, I can see myself at the party. Mm. Very evocative, mm. Very evocative.
This is Big Star with Kangaroo. Big Star, it's called Kangaroo, the first track chosen for you tonight by my playlist guest, Steve Kilby from The Church. Steve, that song delivered exactly everything that you promised it would, but so emotive. Like, you do get a real sense of a feeling of a time and place from it, don't you?
Desolation, yeah, mm. Yeah. And, you know, now there's been a lot of records made like that. You know, a lot of people have made records that incorporate all that, but I don't know. To me, when I first got my hands on it, that's the first time I'd ever heard stuff falling apart like that. Like, yeah, so it was quite shocking to sort of hear it back in the day.
You spent time when your family moved here, I think, in Dapto and Shepparton. Yeah. What was it like when you made the move from Shepparton to Sydney? How important was that for you?
I moved from Shepparton to Canberra.
Oh, I was only... Yeah, I lived in Dapto till I was 9,
and then I spent a year in Shepparton, and then we moved to Canberra, and I lived in Canberra until I was about 22, and then I moved from Canberra to Sydney, and that was liberation. I was always a sort of a square peg in a round hole in Canberra, and I was making music. Nobody liked my music, and I didn't have any... When I left school, I didn't seem to have any friends, and I just concentrated on music. And then I moved to Sydney and I started selling printed T-shirts at Paddington Market. And suddenly I had loads of friends and I had loads of people to play my music to and plot and, you know, think about the whole thing, go and see the pub rock. And so moving from Canberra to Sydney in like 1978 or 1979, it was like a whole new world opened up, and I went from being a misfit in Canberra to sort of an interesting kind of guy, I guess, in Sydney.
That was the pub rock era. Did you embrace that, or were you interested in a more alternative scene?
Was I what? Interested in what?
The pub rock era.
I was interested in it because I was part of it. I didn't really like the pub rock bands very much per se. I still don't really like pub rock. I don't like pubs. Am I allowed to say that?
Sure.
I don't like pubs. I don't like all of that. But it was really good because the church kind of in 1980 we kind of piggybacked on the pub rock scene, and suddenly there were millions and millions of gigs you could play. You could play for like a month in Sydney every night and never play the same place twice. So in that way, it was really great for the church. Although we were kind of at odds with being a pub rock band because we had these sort of other ambitions, you know, to be something else, whatever the hell I thought that was. But it certainly wasn't being pub rock.
Steve Kilby from The Church is here. Now, the next song that you're going to play for us is Sebastian by Cockney Rebel. I have never heard of Cockney Rebel. Could you please enlighten me and anyone else who's in my position?
Okay. Well, there was a show called by this guy called Chris Winter on the ABC on Monday nights, and I first heard Cockney Rebel on that show, and he sort of had an hour or two to play all this music, the latest music coming out of England mostly, and I was really struck by Cockney Rebel. I love David Bowie so much, I had room in my heart for people who were very influenced by David Bowie. And so Steve Harley, and it was just Cockney Rebel at this stage, but Steve Harley, the songwriter, sort of, it was like a cross between Bowie and Bob Dylan, and it was a very glam rock affair. I was really struck by this whole shtick, especially with the orchestra. And Sebastian was sort of like the crowning achievement. It was a bit of a big hit in England. It was even used in that movie Velvet Goldmine, and it was a sort of a big moment in England, although it didn't do anything here at all. We had to wait until Come Up and See Me, Make Me Smile. But I just think it's a wonderful piece of showbizzy, melodramatic, a life I never lived in, the sort of salons, slagged in a Bowery salon, loves the story to serialize. No courtesan could begin to decipher your beam of light. It's sort of like this world I never inhabited, of sort of intrigue and salons and all of these strange dissipated tubercular poets and stuff. I don't know. Yeah, and the chorus, somebody called him Sebastian. It's like a great chorus. It's like, I don't know, it's a strange thing to think of, to have that as a chorus, but it really works.
Here is Cockney Rebel with Sebastian. Cockney Rebel, and, well, somebody called him Sebastian. Sebastian chosen for you by Steve Kilby from The Church, who is my guest on the playlist tonight. You're with Suzanne Hill. Now, Steve, just from listening to those two tracks and hearing you talk, you obviously love a complex lyric. How important are lyrics to you when you're listening to music?
Everything, yeah. Everything. But it doesn't have to be complex, because it's sometimes it can be really simple as well. It isn't just sheer complexity that appeals to me. There's a Mark Bolan song, and the lyrics are, is it love that makes us rock? And I'm down with that as much as I am with the complexity of all of that. But lyrics are really important. We used to have, when in the old church, when with the old guys, we used to have these arguments. They go, listen to this record. And I go, yeah, but the lyrics and the singing are stupid. And they go, well, ignore that and just listen to the guitar work. And it's like, I cannot ignore stupid singers and stupid lyrics. I do enjoy the complexity of that, of those lyrics. And the, I mean, it's so far beyond, you know, Saturday night, I'm going to get in a fight and my girl is all right. It's, I don't like those kind of lyrics. I like esoteric lyrics, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, our next track is George Harrison with I'd Have You Anytime. It's actually Harrison and Dylan writing together. What is it about this particular song that stayed with you?
It's just beautiful. I remember, like, being 16 and going around a kid's house, and somehow one of his elder brothers had bought this triple album, All Things Must Pass, and that's the first track on the album. And immediately I was struck by this languid, soft, yearning, beautiful song. Yes, Dylan never talks about it or has never attempted to do it or anything. It's a very strange and wonderful song. And just recently, my youngest daughter, who is 20, rang me up and said, "Dad, I'm falling in love with this song." I said, "What is it?" She said, "I'd Have You Anytime." I went, "Oh my God, I love that song so much." It's good. It's good now, and it will always be a really beautiful love song. You can really feel the love in this song, I think. And it's off one of the greatest Beatles solo albums, if not the greatest Beatles solo album. I mean, who could not like this song? It's just so bloody nice. All I have is yours. All you see is mine. And I'm glad to hold you in my arms. I have you anytime. Let me say,
George Harrison, and I'd Have You Anytime. It's Nightlife on ABC Radio. I've got Steve Kilby from The Church here giving us his personal playlist. The Church are about to, well, in November, so a couple of months away, embark on a tour called A Psychedelic Symphony, where they'll be playing all their greatest songs accompanied by a 30-piece symphony orchestra. They'll be in Sydney, the Gold Coast, Canberra, Newcastle, Melbourne, Geelong, Brisbane, and also in Adelaide. Steve, just last week in a segment that we've been running called Rooms That Rock, where we talk about live venues, we actually featured the Theberton Theatre last week, and we were hearing that acts like Morrissey have said it's one of the kind of the greatest places in terms of its acoustics. What are your take on the best place you've played in terms of the sound and the quality?
In Australia?
Mm.
I'm a big fan of the Enmore. I'm a big fan of the Palais in Melbourne. I like the State too. I like these. And in America, we play a lot of these theatres that have once seen better days. You know what I mean? They've like the Enmore. It's faded grandeur from another era, and it's always like in slight need of repair. I like that. I like that idea for a venue. I don't like these really clinical venues. There's one in Brisbane called QPAC where everything's absolutely perfect, but it feels a bit sterile. Mm. Because I'm on stage, I'm not always sure what the acoustics are like. I know Theberton Theatre has been refurbished since the last time I was there, but I can tell you about one night I played the Theberton Theatre opening for Ice House, or as they were then, Flowers. And there was a girl standing right in front of me, and she was saying something. I couldn't see what it was, but she sang over and over. And I walked over to have a look at what she was saying or mouthing, because the music was so loud. And she was saying, "I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you."
How'd you feel about that?
I felt great. That's what I got into showbiz for that. It was so every now and then you would open for a band whose followers hated anybody that was standing between them and their beloved band, that they hated them and they couldn't just wait patiently. They knew you had to play your thing and before they could get to their heroes, but they would make sure you knew that they were putting up with you and not enjoying it.
There's a memory from the Theberton Theatre. Now, we are going to Bob Dylan now with Idiot Wind. And, I mean, Dylan, obviously, such a huge, a vast array of songs you could have chosen. Why Idiot Wind for you, Steve?
I think this is sort of where he reached a real peak of his, this sort of song that's a kind of a bit of a slagging off. Oh, just the incredible fantasy. They say I shot a man named Graham, took his wife to Italy. She inherited $1 million, and when she died, it came to me. I can't help it if I'm lucky. It's just sort of like unbelievable audacity to write songs about stuff like that. And it's just all over the place. And I know it has a ferocity and intelligence and great. All of the lines are amazing. Grant McLennan and I, we're both really big fans of this song, and we would sort of sit there quoting the lines back to each other in a Dylan-ish accent, Dylan-esque accent. I just think it's one of the greatest types of songs like this, like starting with Positively 4th Street and Like a Rolling Stone, these sort of angry sort of put-down songs that Dylan wrote. I think it's just the best one of all of those. An absolute classic.
Bob Dylan, Idiot Wind. Bob Dylan with Idiot Wind. It's Nightlife on ABC Radio. Suzanne Hill with you on this Saturday night. My guest bringing you his playlist is Steve Kilby from The Church. Ah, Steve, gosh, you're bringing us some fantastic music tonight here on Nightlife. Most of the playlist is older. Are you still actively seeking out new bands and new music? And if so, what are you hearing that you are influenced by?
I gave up long ago, unfortunately. I'm just an old guy doddering through my twilight memories now.
Well, there are plenty of great ones, so I guess it keeps you going. We're back in the era. We've got the Rolling Stones next with Street Fighting Man. Tell us about this one.
Probably one of my favorite Rolling Stones tracks ever. Just got an incredible energy. And once again, when it came out, it was like quite revolutionary. Like it all seems all that revolution stuff, as David Bowie said, I could never get off on that revolution stuff. Too many snags. What a drag. But at the time, I remember this song coming out and I was just shocked by it. I still am. And when it comes on, I still feel like sort of marching around the room and sleepy London town, just no place for a street fighting man. I don't know. It's sort of like, I like it. I like it a lot more than Start Me Up. And I liked it when the Stones seemed to have a sort of a pseudo political agenda. And, and the Stones and the Beatles were, I was just a kid. I didn't know what the hell revolution, it's just a great word in a rock and roll song, isn't it? But I like the idea of Mick Jagger having a sort of scrap with some other geezer in the street in England in 1968 or whenever this was. It's just a fantasy as much as anything else.
The Rolling Stones and Street Fighting Man. I've been talking with Steve Gilby from The Church. They are embarking in November on a tour called A Psychedelic Symphony, teaming up with a 30-piece symphony orchestra. 1st of November, Sydney at the Opera House. 7th of November, Gold Coast at the Star. The 12th in Canberra at the Canberra Theatre. The 14th of November in Newcastle at the Civic Theatre. The 20th in Melbourne at Hamer Hall. The 21st in Geelong at Costa Hall. The 25th of November in Brisbane at Fortitude Music Hall, and the 28th of November in Adelaide at Theberton Theatre, where Steve may well bring up memories of that girl saying that she hated him back in the day. Steve, before I let you go, I mean, I know you said recently that there's still a voice in your head telling you you haven't done enough, even though you've been at it for, what, 45 years with the church. Why is there that voice still saying that to you?
What's the voice still saying? I missed that bit.
You haven't done enough.
I guess when you have, I have been ruled by ambition all my life. Something's been telling me, get out there and do something, make music, make art, write a poem, do something, you know. It doesn't just switch off ever. And no matter how much you do, you still feel there's more left to be done, and it doesn't conveniently just stop when you want it to. You know, when you use this mental whip to whip yourself, you know, all those years loading equipment up and down a staircase to get a rehearsal room to rehearse it with a band that nobody wanted to hear, writing songs no one wanted to hear, all of that, you've got to have this ambition going, you've got to keep going. And then when you even achieve a modicum of success, it, of course, it can never be happy. And, you know, you go, you say to your ambition, but I'm playing the Opera House and it's sold out. And it's going, yeah, but, you know, you should be doing the arena, you know. And then when you do the arena, it'll be saying you should be doing the Megadome. You know what I mean? Like, whatever you achieve, you can't just stop there and go, oh, that's okay. You have to, the nature of the thing that gives you all this energy and whips you down the road is that it doesn't stop and you can't stop it.
Yeah. The final track you're going to play for us tonight is Crystal Japan by David Bowie. It's actually an instrumental rather than one of his more well-known songs. What is it about this piece, Steve, that explains your relationship with Bowie better than, you know, perhaps one of the more popular songs?
I think this sounds like the national anthem of a, I can imagine as Atlantis sank beneath the waves, this was the music that was playing. It's got this incredible, it's got this vocal line that is just machine vocals. It's him and Eno. They would have recorded this track during the low sessions. And I guess the album was so an incredible album, they didn't have room for this. But this is still one of my favorite Bowie tracks. It's just got an incredible gravitas for a short piece of music. These bubbling, burbling synthesizers, and then this beautiful vocal line comes in. As I say, it sounds like a national anthem of a civilization that no longer exists.
I love that description. Hey, Steve, thanks so much for being our guest here on the playlist tonight. Steve Gilby from The Church.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.